You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Did you call back? I called back.
Gilbert, fade away.
Hey, what's up, everyone? Ben Standing here for another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Talking to you guys on Wednesday night. Just a few minutes ago, I recorded a podcast with the host of the Locked On Raptors podcast, Sean Woodley. Why did I host a podcast with the Locked On Raptors guy? You know what? I'm sick and tired of talking about the Boston Celtics and Cleveland Cavaliers. Let's talk about another team that actually finished ahead of the Wizards a little bit last year. Yet it does feel like nobody's really talking about Toronto this year. So I wanted to talk with Sean, get his sense of where Toronto fits in the East. If he feels like me that the Raptors are a bit overlooked in the East. And, you know, got his he fired back with some thoughts or asked questions to me about the Wizards. So a fun conversation. I'll play that for you guys in just a second. As always, if you missed any of our podcasts, you can go find us on iTunes or anywhere else you do your podcasting. I already put up two other podcasts this week. One, me solo rambling about what Scott Brooks may or may not do at the center position with Marcin Gortat and Jan Mahimi, a scenario that kind of thought it might go a different way this offseason, but they're both back, and now the Wizards are, they've got an interesting tandem, but they don't necessarily have a stretch five the way so many teams in this league do. And then for those of you who are into the Georgetown situation, I recorded a podcast last night with Andrew Geiger from Casual Hoya and Bobby Bancroft. Georgetown put out their full schedule for this upcoming season. It is a crazy one, and we got into what the heck is going on there. And of course, again, if you just subscribe to iTunes, you will not miss any other podcast. We're getting close to the start of training camp, which means getting close to ramping up to, you know, back to our usual 5 days a week. So that's coming up soon. So if you subscribe, you won't miss any of the podcast. If you want to hit me up on Twitter, I am at Ben Standing. And if you've got any thoughts on the podcast, ideas, comments, whatever it may be, shoot me an email. I'm down with that. bstandig1@gmail.com. All right, without further delay, let's get into this. Myself, Sean Woodley from the Locked On Raptors podcast, talking Wizards, Raptors, and the Eastern Conference.
Well, it feels like we've talked incessantly about the Celtics and the Cavaliers because all this offseason, because they're making all these fancy moves and their big trades and blah, blah, blah. And it feels like the other teams in the East are getting ignored. Obviously, we talk about the Wizards a lot, but the Toronto Raptors, they actually finished ahead of the Wizards last year. It almost doesn't feel like that because of the fact that the Wizards, I feel like, have been more part of the conversation in the East than in terms of what's coming up with than Toronto. But we should not overlook our neighbors to the North. So here to tell us what's going on with Toronto, get his take on the East, the host of the Locked On Raptors, Mr. Sean Woodley on Twitter, at Woodley Sean. Sean, how are we doing on this mid-September day?
Ben, I'm doing really well. It's really hot in Toronto, which I'm not a fan of. I was enjoying like the nice like fall-ish weather the last couple weeks, and now it's hot again, and now I'm miserable. And I'm just excited for basketball to start because that means cold weather is coming. It means basketball is coming. It means we don't have to talk about rankings anymore, which I am really excited for. That's the kind of thing you're in right now. And I just – it's funny to me. Like, so everyone gets up in arms over the rankings on, like, Tuesday morning. And then by Tuesday night, everyone's like, oh, rankings are dumb anyway. Why do we care about these? And then Wednesday morning, another batch of rankings comes out. And people are going out of their minds again. And it's just, I don't know, the rinse and repeat kind of cycle of this time of year is – It's annoying to me, so I'm ready for actual basketball to start, and I'm excited the preseason's shorter this year, too. It's going to be good soon. we're almost there.
No, you're right. I mean, it's like I said, it's we're talking on September 13th or so, and the season starts in about a month. what is it, October 16th, I think, is the Wizards opener. So, yeah, I mean, it's kind of crazy. I still feel like I'm in off-season mode, but you're right. I'm excited. Training camp starts in a couple weeks. Get going with that. And, no more nonsense. We don't have to make up podcast topics. I don't know how you've been surviving here for the last few weeks, but each day I'm like, oh, boy, what am I going to talk about today? But somehow we've made it through. Well, let's talk about you guys for a second here. I know the basics. Like, you guys, Kyle Lowry, DeMar DeRozan, Serge Ibaka, I think we all get that. I guess it feels from the outside, this is what's fascinating, it's the outside versus the people who are on the ground. From the outside, it feels like, you know what, that's a good team. They could probably get 50 wins, but it feels like there's almost no chance that there's another level to go. I don't know why. Is it because they've had some bad playoff scenarios? I mean, whereas like the Wizards getting against Boston, it went seven games, so close. Toronto goes up against Cleveland, obviously a better team, and gets smushed. If the Wizards in Toronto had been reversed, maybe we would feel differently, but that's not how it is. So it feels like Toronto is being completely overlooked because nobody seems to think that they have any chance of getting to another step in the East. As somebody who's there and looking at this team, what's your sense of that type of thinking? Is that just outside not knowing what they're talking about, or is there some truth to that?
No, I mean, I think the Raptors are kind of a victim of their run that they had at the end of the regular season last year, because they went 14-7 without Kyle Lowry. You know, Serge Ibaka, PJ Tucker came in, and they became like this ridiculously good defensive team, and they won all those games, and they screwed up their seeding, and they ended up coming third, playing the Cavs in the second round when they were probably lined up to play Boston, had things, you know, gone the way people thought they were going to go when Lowry went down. And they ended up, you know, like you said, in that reverse situation. I think had the Raptors been the four seed and played Boston in the second round, it would have been an equally great series. The Raptors really had some matchup advantages against Boston last season, and I would have picked the Raptors to win a series against the Celtics last year, and we would have been talking about probably the Raptors in the conference finals again. And, you know, back-to-back conference finals is nothing to sneeze at, and, you know, yes, they lost to the Cavs in the second round, but, like, I don't think that means they were a worse team than they were the year before. I think, all told, after the trade deadline moves they made last year, they were a better team last season than they were the year before, but people don't really talk about them that way, and they were kind of screwed by the seeding, and I think that has bled into how people are talking about this team coming into this year. But obviously there's some other stuff at play. They lost a whole lot of experience off their bench. Patrick Patterson went to the Thunder. PJ Tucker's on the Rockets now. Corey Joseph was traded in the deal that sort of facilitated CJ Miles signing with the Raptors. And they lost. Oh, Damari Carroll's gone too. But so that's not that big a loss. But yeah, it's there's a lot of change, a lot of turnover, a lot of sort of reliance on young guys, and I think people are just kind of tired of the Raptors. I mean, they've been really the only consistent force in the Eastern Conference for the last 4 years outside of Cleveland. They've, you know, made four straight, or they're averaging 51 wins over the last 4 years, made the playoffs 4 years in a row, of course, and have had some, you know, uninspiring performances, but I still think they're a really good team, especially when it comes to the regular season. Kyle Lowry, he's awesome. People kind of forget this too, and this is kind of harkens back to what I was talking about with how the end of the season kind of colored what the Raptors are. You know, Lowry, before he got hurt last season, was so far and away the best point guard in the Eastern Conference. There was that whole debate over who was going to make the All-Star team as guards for the East, and Lowry was really the only lock, the only guy that you could look at the advanced metrics and say, yeah, this guy's clearly better than everyone else, every other one of these guys, even John Wall. And people kind of forget that. Like, he had a career season and then he missed 22 games, and people just sort of look at that season as a lost season for him, which it was anything but before he got hurt. And, you know, DeMar DeRozan keeps getting better, and Jonas Valanciunas is still Jonas Valanciunas. He's pretty much the most predictable guy in the league at this point. And also, people kind of, I think, are underrating what Serge Ibaka did for the Raptors last year. I mean, in the playoffs against the Bucks, especially against the Bucks, Ibaka was, if not the Raptors' best player in that series, he was the second best player behind DeRozan. He was outstanding. He was, you know, blocking Giannis at the rim repeatedly. His rim protection numbers in that series were outstanding. And when he played center last year for the Raptors, he was excellent. And that's, you know, it's debatable as to whether he's going to play a bunch of center this season because Valanciunas is still on the roster. But Ibaka was really good for the Raptors last year. He's a really nice third complementary piece to Lowry and DeRozan. And, you know, the CJ Miles pickup's really nice too. Like, this is a good team that I think people are kind of sleeping on. And, you know, this probably is littered with bias because I cover the team and talk about them every day. And I'm always sort of, I probably lean on the positive side more than a lot of Raptors people, but yeah, they're a really good team. Last season, the end of it kind of colored, I think, you know, what people are talking about coming into this season. And their offseason wasn't as sexy as a lot of other teams. I mean, Cleveland, I'm not sure it was a great offseason for them, but they did a bunch of stuff at least to get people talking. The Celtics obviously overhauled most of their roster. The Bucks are sort of the hype team. There's a couple other teams like the Sixers that people kind of like. The Raptors had an unsexy, you could argue, sort of a negative offseason considering they lost so many guys, but I think there's a real upside with this team considering the amount of young talent that's on the roster at the back of the bench. And I think this isn't going to be a team that starts the season on a crazy tear. But by the end of the season, I think they're going to be right back where they have been the last few years as one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference.
That was a good breakdown and like you said, sort of an upbeat one. I was more positive on Toronto than I was expecting. But like I said, if you look at the team, I mean, DeRozan had a huge year last year. You mentioned Lowry's injury. But, like, you know, in terms of the Wizards, like, I look at the two teams and think, look, DeRozan and Lowry, Wall and Beal, we can argue which backcourt is better. But let's just, for argument's sake, you know, call that a push. You got Serge Ibaka. Again, let's just say Markieff Morris. You know, whatever. Serge Ibaka is maybe a little better historically, but obviously that's a pretty good matchup there. Valanciunas against Marcin Gortat. You know, again, same thing, kind of two big men who kind of, you know, are pretty consistent with the production they provide. Small forward, you know, I like Otto Porter a little more than C.J. Miles, but C.J. Miles is a capable veteran for sure. So if the starting lineups, by and large, I think are somewhat even. But what's interesting, I think, in terms of these two teams is what goes on behind them. The Wizards bench last year was an obvious disaster. They think they made some positive moves with Tim Frazier and Jody Meeks and Mike Scott. Plus, they're hoping, you know, Jan Mahimi can stay healthy and Kelly Oubre takes a step up. But I feel like with Toronto, like in terms of these two teams, the young guys on Toronto, mainly Jakob Poeltl, DeLon Wright, who's now the backup point guard after
Joseph.
Yeah, kind of. Yeah, he got traded. And then Norman Powell, in particular, maybe Pascal Siakam as well. But like those guys, that to me is sort of the variable, the unknown variable between these two teams. Do those guys take a big step up? Because the Wizards, other than Kelly Oubre, they don't really have a young guy on the bench who maybe can go another level or two or more. The Wizards bench, we kind of know what they are. Whereas with Toronto, it feels like it could go up significantly, but at the same point, they're more unproven and it makes it more unsettled. What's your sense of those guys, and do you kind of see it the same way that it seems like those young players may be the, on some level, the difference between which Wizards or Toronto team finishes higher in the standings?
Yeah, I think, first of all, you mentioned the Tim Frazier and Jody Meeks signings, like, and Mike Scott. Like, do you have any faith that's going to make the Wizards bench better? Because I kind of think it's almost worse than it was last year, but that's just me.
Oh, no. I mean... It was an utter train wreck last year. They literally didn't have a backup point guard essentially the whole season. I mean, right. Tim Frazier has proven to be a quality player in this league, right. And he can run the offense. Jody Meeks, he can't stay healthy, but yeah. He's played. He's what they need, a 40% 3-point shooter. And Mike Scott, I don't know, but you know, those two alone, if those two can just be decent, I know they don't have to be great. They don't have to be unbelievable. They just have to be decent. That's a big step up from what they were. But they got to stay healthy, and Meeks hasn't been able to do that. Mahimi was hurt last year. So that's definitely the unknown with the Wizards.
That's fair, yeah. I guess the Wizards, to me, kind of remind me of the Clippers for the last few years, where they just were never able to figure out the bench with the starting five they had because it was so damn dominant. But back to what we were talking about with the Raptors is, yeah, like the young guys on the bench are exciting to me. And, like, I think there's already sort of reason to believe that some of them are going to hit this year. Like, DeLon Wright last year, he didn't play a ton, and he hasn't played much in his career so far because he didn't really play. He was kind of a redshirt in his first season, played a lot in the D-League, and then last season he was hurt until about January or February. He only played, I think, 20-something games. But when he did get in, he was really effective, and his defense at the, you know, he's like 6'5". He's, you know, I think he has the potential to be one of the best defensive point guards in the league, period. He can guard ones, twos, and even some threes because he's just so long and athletic, and he can kind of poke balls free. He had a bunch of blocks last season, too, that were really fun. He racks up steals. Like, DeLon Wright, I think, is going to be, you know, I think he has all the potential in the world to be better than what Corey Joseph was. And Corey Joseph, you could argue, for at least his first season in Toronto, was the best backup point guard in the league. So DeLon's really exciting to me. Norm Powell has already kind of shown in his time where he's played that he's ready to be like a very you know, important contributor for the Raptors in the playoffs last season. Putting him in the starting five kind of saved the playoffs and sort of saved that series against the Bucks. And I'm curious to see if he's going to start instead of CJ Miles, because Powell's always been better when he's been like a fifth starter in a unit, where as opposed to sort of being the main guy in a second unit. But that remains to be seen. That's one of the bigger questions the Raptors have coming into the season. But then you go down the line, like Jakob Poeltl last season, as a rookie, was so far advanced defensively that like it was kind of startling to see a guy who's 20 years old, who had 2 years in college, who was just so smart and so just fundamentally sound on defense. And he's only got room to grow. I think he, you know, has the potential to grow into a really nice defensive anchor for this team. And I wouldn't be surprised if, you know, it's going to be hard for him to get a ton of minutes this season, because there's a lot of sort of you want to have Ibaka closing games at center, I think, and that's going to cut into how much Valanciunas and Poeltl are both going to play at center. But Poeltl's really nice. I like the idea of a potential Poeltl-Ibaka closing lineup for the Raptors, actually. I think that would work pretty well. But yeah, like, there's reason to believe these young guys are going to hit. And then there's sort of more wildcard guys like Pascal Siakam, Lucas Nogueira, who I think last season had like the Raptors' best defensive rating and offensive rating. And he was just always productive when he was on the court. He's just inconsistent and kind of has some sort of attitude concerns, I would say. Like, it's hard to, you know, really pin that on a guy, but he kind of goes up and down with his emotions. And then OG Anunoby, who the Raptors picked 22nd overall, wherever they picked, he's a guy that I think the Raptors are really high on. He's a guy who I think, you know, if it weren't for the sort of uncertainty around his knee injury, he would have gone a lot higher in the draft. And I wouldn't be surprised if by the end of the season, Anunoby, once he's healthy and back in the lineup, is, you know, factoring in late in games as well. So yeah, I agree that I just think there's way more upside with the Raptors bench than there is with Washington's bench. And I think the floor, maybe it's lower, but I think we've already seen from a lot of these guys that it's going to be pretty good. And that's kind of why, you know, it's understandable that like the sort of lower, the sort of the regression is baked into the projections for the Raptors this season. Like ESPN had them at like 43.5 wins. And it's understandable that you'd, you know, project that because there's a lot of unknown. But I do think a lot of these guys have already shown flashes that they're going to be able to contribute at a higher level when they have more of a role. And that's why I kind of think I'm leaning towards like the higher end of things for the Raptors, because I do think by the end of the season these guys are going to click and the Raptors are going to be just as deep as they have been. It'll be a different kind of depth, and there's a lot of different skills there that don't exist anymore that, you know, from the Raptors teams of old. But there's a lot of different skill sets and a lot of interesting guys who might even be better than the guys who have departed. And it could leave the Raptors being, you know, the same formidable team going into the playoffs as they were last season.
It is just striking looking at the two benches. The Wizards have only had one first-round pick in the last 4 years. That was Oubre. They've traded the picks away. They got Marcin Gortat, Markieff Morris for that. They also got Bojan Bogdanović, who obviously is gone after 2 months. But Toronto, you guys have first-round pick, first-round pick, first-round pick all over the place. So definitely a different construction mode for these teams, and that's, you know, if nothing else, I would think you guys maybe have a better chance for some longer-term continuity. On the other hand, the Wizards starting five, you know, other than Gortat, they're all 28 and under. I mean, you know, Bradley Beal and Otto Porter, both who hit made big strides last year. You know, they're both, you know, what, 24 or something. So the Wizards still have plenty of room to grow with their starters, whereas, like, you know, Kyle Lowry's getting up there, Ibaka. He's, you know, I'll take Ibaka's age for myself, but we kind of know what he's at as well. One thing I'm curious about, because you guys with Valanciunas, the Wizards with Gortat and Mahimi, I talked the other day on the podcast about, for all the things the Wizards have done this offseason, they mentioned the bench, they retain Otto Porter, they get John Wall to an extension, maybe the biggest question mark kind of remains, and that is, In this evolving NBA where teams are going smaller often, you have these stretch fives. You know, part of the reason why the Wizards lost to the Celtics in the playoffs was because Al Horford just kept going at the three and draining threes, and the Wizards couldn't counter. Is how do the Wizards, who have so much money invested in Marcin Gortat and Jan Mahimi, and they don't really have a stretch five who talent wise is as good as they are? How do the Wizards handle teams who are going to be able to go small, like the Celtics and Golden State, obviously? And you guys sort of have the same issue with Valanciunas. I know you have Ibaka. Is that where you guys are at with this modern game? Because maybe I'm wrong. I don't view Jakob Poeltl as a guy who's necessarily chasing stretch fives either. What's your sense of with Valanciunas and the lineup? How do you think you guys are going to handle small ball lineups this year?
Yeah, they're going to miss P.J. Tucker because at the end of the season, Tucker and Ibaka as the closing front court was like just absurdly good defensively and obviously really nice offensively too because both of those guys could hit a spot-up look. I do think you're kind of underrating Poeltl a little bit just because he's so fleet of foot for a guy his size that's why I mentioned the idea of him and Ibaka closing games together because Ibaka, you know, if you're going to play that sort of setup, I think Poeltl's fast enough where he could guard, you know, fours and kind of get up to the perimeter if you need him to. And then Ibaka near the rim was just awesome last season when he was given the opportunity to be near the rim. It wasn't all the time, but when he was there, he was really good. And he kind of had flashes. He wasn't quite old Oklahoma City Ibaka, but it was the same kind of idea where you give him the opportunity to be in the area where he's the most effective, and he was really good. So that's why I kind of like the idea of that look as a closing lineup. I do think we're going to see a lot of C.J. Miles, Norm Powell, and DeMar DeRozan all on the court at the same time to close games too. Like, the Raptors are going to, you know, when they come up against different teams, like, they're going to have different options, which is something that they didn't used to have before they made these deals for Ibaka and Tucker last season and before bringing in C.J. Miles. Like, they were pretty stuck, and Valanciunas, you know, ended up being on the floor a lot late in games or not being on the floor a lot late in games just because he couldn't really hang with anyone, you know, whether it was big men or, like, he couldn't defend a pick and roll against a big man, and he couldn't hang with smaller lineups. So, Valanciunas, I think, as opposed to where the Wizards are at, where I don't really see a scenario where they can go super small, like, what are you going to play, Markieff Morris at the five? Like, that seems kind of difficult. And, like, maybe a lineup of, like, Morris, Porter, Oubre, Beal, and Wall could work for spurts, but the rebounding there would be pretty tricky, I think. Whereas the Raptors, like, you can throw Ibaka there with C.J. Miles or potentially Jakob Poeltl or even Pascal Siakam, who's also really, like, super fast for a big man. He's more like a wing than a big man, really. He's, like, 6'9". He's kind of spindly, but he's super quick. Like, the Raptors have a few more options in the options there. They're, like, they're unproven options, and OG Anunoby you could throw into that pile as well. But I do think there are options there. Whereas the Wizards, yeah, it's tricky. They're kind of stuck with the one way they're going to play, and, like, they're probably one of the best teams in the league at playing that way with a traditional big man, so that's pretty good. But, yeah, against certain teams, they're going to kind of get exposed because they just don't have the interchangeable parts like the Raptors do. And, yeah, like I said, P.J. Tucker's going to be missed, and I don't think the Raptors are going to be quite as effective in those looks this season, at least until, you know, they can bring guys along or whatever. Maybe Siakam or Anunoby becomes a lot better than we're expecting. But I do think the Raptors are fine when it comes to small ball. They use a lot of two-point guard lineups as well. Like, I wouldn't be shocked to see, like, Lowry, DeLon with, like, Norm and DeRozan out there or something like that. Like, it's super small, but, you know, there were times last season where Dwayne Casey was pretty happy to go to those looks. There was one game, I think against the Hornets, it was, like, the last game before the All-Star break. The Raptors were struggling, and they were down, like, 13 going into the fourth quarter. And they played an entire quarter with, it was Kyle Lowry, DeLon Wright, Corey Joseph, Damari Carroll, and Jakob Poeltl, which you would think is crazy small, but it ended up, you know, bringing back a comeback. They played all 12 minutes of that fourth quarter, and it was really good. And Dwayne Casey seems pretty happy to go with those smaller lineups. And you get burned by it less, right? Like, there's a lot of teams that are going to that as well around the league. So not having, you know, it becomes more of a liability when you don't have those interchangeable parts. And I think the Wizards, that's where their kind of downfall is going to be because, yeah, it's tricky. Like, how do you think they're going to approach it? Because, like, do you think that Morris is going to play some center? Like, or is there a move out there that they can make? They're kind of, you know, hamstrung when it comes to the cap. Like, what do you think the Wizards are going to do when it comes to small ball?
Well, yeah, I mean, you mentioned Markieff Morris. I think you could do that for, like, a minute or two. Like, if you're playing Golden State, right, and Golden State has Draymond Green, yeah, you could put Markieff Morris there. And I'm not saying that the Wizards were matching up with that depth lineup. I'm just saying you could do that. But you're right, they lose a lot of rebounding. And that's you only want to do that for a brief time. Markieff Morris is in foul trouble often. So that's not a lineup you can go with a lot. They did have a lineup last year with Gortat at center, but with Oubre and Otto Porter at the forwards with Wall and Beal. That was actually one of the better lineups during the regular season as far as, like, net rating, like literally, like, top three or four right after sort of Golden State's best lineups. The Wizards, that lineup was pretty good. But it's sort of tricky. I mean, you know, Jason Smith can give you a stretch five option offensively, but defensively it's not ideal. And, you know, Mike Scott, we'll see. In theory, he maybe can be like a stretch four type, and maybe you can get away with him and Markieff Morris, but, you know, that doesn't seem ideal. So, yeah, I think they're, like I said, I thought for all the world, I think most people did, that Gortat or Ibaka, but probably Gortat just based on his contract, wouldn't be back this year, that they would have traded him. But as a whole, in free agency this year, or the offseason market, the center position was just completely devalued. There's just no bang for the buck, so they ultimately decided to hang tight, you know, which is, I think, a reasonable move. Again, the Wizards' 49 wins last year was the most they've had in forever. One game away from the Eastern Conference Finals, so no reason to, like, blow it up just for the sake of changing it. But, yes, it does remain an issue against certain teams.
I feel like guys like Gort, like the same thing happened with Valanciunas this offseason. Like, I was pretty convinced they were going to try to trade him, and there were reports that they tried to trade him at the draft, and they couldn't. And that speaks to the sort of saturation of the big man market. But, like, I do kind of feel like the pendulum is swinging to the point where those guys are being so undervalued. Like, they're going to be better than what people are sort of laying out and sort of expecting. Because, like, Valanciunas is still a useful player. He can still do some things that are team. You okay?
Yeah, I'll survive. Keep going.
Okay. No, he's still, like, a guy who can do some positive things for your team. Like, maybe there are times where he can't be on the floor and, like, late in games and in crunch time. That's probably not the guy you want out there. And probably the same with Gortat, although the Wizards have made that lineup work, like you mentioned, so maybe they can't afford to. But, yeah, like, these guys are useful players. They're good players in the NBA. And just because they're not, you know, switchy, who can, you know, defend 3 to 5 and shoot threes, like, that doesn't mean they're a bad player. And, like, some people, like, Raptors fans are, like, swooning over the idea of Valanciunas shooting threes, and it's like, you don't really want threes, because what's he supposed to do when someone closes out on him? Like, he's not blowing by a guy and, you know, making a play out of that, and I don't think Gortat's doing that either. So, like, a lot of these centers are kind of what they are, and that's fine, and just because they couldn't be traded in the offseason doesn't mean they're bad. Like, they're less valuable on the market than they are to their own teams. So I do think, yeah, like, Gortat will be – it's an interesting fit to have him – both him and Mahinmi, who are very similar players. But, like, Gortat's still a really good player. He is, like, one of the few guys who – just in my experience watching the Raptors play the Wizards, like, Gortat's one of the few guys who's, like, stronger than Jonas Valanciunas. And that's not easy to do because Valanciunas is a monster. So, like, he's a useful player. He's a smart player. He's a guy you want to have out there. Maybe it's not the most modern fit, but, like, I kind of like teams that are sticking with the sort of more old school, just, like, 1 through 5 kind of lineup. And, yeah, maybe it's not the Warriors, but there are very few teams that are the Warriors. And trying to replicate a team that's historically great is not easy, and there's not that many players out there. Like, it'd be great if every team in the league could have 5 guys who can switch every position and who are long and who can shoot threes, but that's just, there aren't that many human beings who can do all that. So making do with the guys you have, I think, is fine. And Valanciunas and Gortat are kind of examples of guys who've been forgotten by the modern NBA, but are still pretty useful.
And here's one thing, just to sort of tie this off. You know, the Golden State Warriors have made this small ball thing such a dominant part of the conversation. But obviously, for one, they're in the Western Conference, so it's not as big of a deal for any of the teams, for either of our teams, unless they make it all the way.
Yeah, let's be honest. The Wizards and Warriors aren't – sorry, Wizards and Raptors aren't playing the Warriors this season. It's fine. They're good.
Hey, you know, you are – the odds are certainly in your favor, that is for sure. But in terms of, if you look at the teams in the East, now Boston, they're the one team where their best lineup does not include a low-post center. But if you look at everybody else, Cleveland's got Tristan Thompson. Yes, they can make Kevin Love a small ball five, but Tristan Thompson is one of their better players. Toronto's got Valanciunas. The Wizards, like we said, with Gortat. You look at Milwaukee, Greg Monroe is not necessarily a dominant low-post center, but he's not a stretch five either. He's more of a mid-range guy. So you wouldn't have to take Gortat or Valanciunas off the court to chase him around. In Detroit, which, you know, maybe Detroit gets back in the playoff mix this year, you've got Andre Drummond. Miami should be in the playoff mix. They've got Hassan Whiteside. Charlotte adds Dwight Howard. I actually kind of think that's a good move for them. Another guy. So there's a lot of teams in the East that the Wizards and the Raptors are going to have to deal with who are going to have something akin to a traditional five on the court. Again, I know there's certain circumstances where you'll take guys off, but Miami's not going to take Hassan Whiteside off the court for extended time. Why would they? So, you know, and things like that, or Detroit with Andre Drummond, it doesn't make sense. So the idea that these teams maybe have, you know, maybe more Wizards in Toronto, but both on some level have a little bit of an issue if you take these, traditional centers, but not as much maybe in reality, because of the fact that there's so many teams in the East of the contenders that also have these types of players.
Yeah, I'm with you there. It's a weird thing. Like, these two teams, I think, you know, maybe more than the other teams in the East, like, they are not really, like, the regular season doesn't matter to the Wizards and Raptors. Like, these are going to be playoff teams. They're probably going to win close to 50 games each. And, like, it's all about the playoffs for these teams. And, yeah, those limitations might, you know, be an issue in a series against the Cavs or the Celtics. But, like, that's kind of expected, I think. And, you know, there are reasons to think that the Celtics, when they go super small, are kind of prone to being beaten up on, too. Like, Jonas Valanciunas tends to eat against the Celtics because no one can rebound on that team, you know, on a good day when they have all their bigs out there. So when they go small, it's even more of a problem for them. Like, there are ways to exploit it. Yes, there's ways for the Cavaliers to eviscerate the Raptors and Wizards by going small. And they've done that the last 2 years that the Cavs have to the Raptors. But, like, you expect to lose to the Cavs anyway. It's a weird year in the East where it feels like being completely imperfect is totally fine because there's so many teams that are just trash. And then the teams at the top of the East, like, the expectations for the Wizards and Raptors, I don't think are that high. I think most people are looking at the Celtics and Cavs as, like, the two best teams in the East. I tend to think the Celtics are closer to the Wizards and Raptors than the Cavs are, than they are to the Cavs. But no, like, the expectations aren't that high. It's totally okay for these two teams to kind of work stuff out in the regular season and not be perfect teams. And then when the playoffs come around, like, yeah, they're probably going to have some limitations, but they have some advantages as well. They can play, especially against a team like the Celtics. So, yeah, just being imperfect is fine. We're all imperfect. We all have flaws. And it's okay. And these two are kind of the embodiment of that.
And I hear you on the flaws part. I deal with that every day. Just to reset the podcast here, Ben Standick, host of the Locked On Wizards. You can follow me on Twitter at Ben Standick. Talking with Sean Woodley, host of the Locked On Raptors podcast. You can follow him at Woodley Sean. You know, it's funny. One thing I'll say, and then we can wrap up if need be. You said that don't worry. Both of these teams are going to be in the playoffs and win a bunch of games and so on. And you mentioned earlier that Toronto. This has been how many years in a row have you guys won at least 50 games or thereabouts?
It's 2 years in a row of 50, and then over 4 years, they've averaged 51.
Okay, so that's a four-year stretch, and you've got more or less the same core with Lowry and DeRozan, so there's reason for you to think that's consistent. I'm not there on the Wizards. I mean, I'm confident with the Wizards. I'm with you. I think Boston is – I don't think the Wizards really lost any ground on Boston, and I thought that before the Kyrie Irving deal, which I didn't totally love. Boston, we'll see what they look like overall, But from the Wizards' perspective, you know, they're not a team that's consistently been good. Now, they won 49 games this year, but the year before, they only finished 500. Injuries played a factor. The 2 years before that, they made the Eastern Conference semifinals. But during the season, it was still sort of rocky up and down. And while I think that their bench improved, they are sort of one of their starters away, particularly any of the non-centers, from being in trouble. Or at least potentially in trouble. So I'm with you that it's likely that both these teams are in position to, you know, contend or host a home court advantage in the first round or what have you. But I've seen too much. I know too much. I've witnessed good years go bad. So I'm not as 100% confident as you that they'll be there. I would, if you made me pick, I will say the Wizards will finish top four in the East. But yeah, it was interesting to hear your level of confidence. Oh yeah, no worries. And I'm looking at like, oh well, hold on a minute. Let's see what happens first. You know, they call it the late curse of Le Boule around here. Let's see what happens before making too many predictions.
Well, yeah, here's the thing with the Wizards, though. Like, I mean, yeah, counting on Bradley Beal to have a second straight healthy season is, like, a tenuous proposition for sure, and I'm not sure I'm confident he's going to play the whole season, but even if he doesn't, like, a John Wall-led team with, like, Morris and Gortat and Porter, like, this is a really bad conference with a lot of really crappy teams that I just feel like the win totals for the top four or five teams in the East are going to be inflated just because they're going to be playing against garbage teams all season long. And even if something goes poorly for these teams, like, I still think there's enough sort of wiggle room and enough margin for error that even if they do lose a bunch of games in the middle of the season, end up with like 42, 43 wins, like, that still could be enough for like a five seed in the East. So I'm not all that concerned, even if like, if the Wizards lose Beal and Wall for extended periods, then yeah, they're in some trouble. Same with the Raptors. If Lowry goes down long term and DeRozan misses time and Ibaka gets hurt, like, yeah, that's a problem. But that's a problem for every single team in the league. So yeah, like, I just think the East is so bad. Like, it really is. And I'm kind of with you too with the Celtics thing. Like, I think they're maybe a slightly worse regular season team just because they're going to have to take some time to figure it out and, you know, see how those guys mesh. And I think their defense is going to take a pretty big drop off from what it was last year without Avery Bradley, without Jay Crowder. And, like, Kyrie Irving doesn't really fix any of the issues that Isaiah Thomas presented either. So I think in the regular season they're going to be slightly worse. Like, people picking them to go over their 56.5 win over-under is, like, insane to me. But in the playoffs, they're a more terrifying team to me, too, because I think Kyrie Irving's a really nice playoff player to have, and he can score pretty much against anybody, and that's a nice thing to have in the playoffs. And I think by that time that it should be rolling a little bit. But, yeah, no, I think the top four teams in the East, like, I think can all kind of breathe easily. I'd like to see, at least from the Raptors' perspective, I'm not sure how you feel about the Wizards and what their sort of philosophy of the rest has really been, but I'd be okay to see the Raptors rest their guys more often this season because there is that margin for error. They do have young guys that they can develop, and I think that's going to have, you know, nice dividends at the end of the season. If, you know, Kyle Lowry plays 5 minutes less per game and you get more DeLon Wright, more Norm Powell, and on down the line you get more minutes for all these young guys, like, I think come playoff time they'll just be a more formidable team. And I think the teams in the East, like the Wizards and Raptors especially, can afford to do that because there's just not all that much, you know, in terms of, like, threats to overtake them in the playoff race. One other question I have for you, though, is, like, looking at the standings, like, what would you place, like, the odds or, like, the percentage chance of the Wizards being the number one seed on? Because, like, I'm looking at it from the Raptors' perspective, and, like, they've won a bunch of games the last couple years. They have the same core, essentially. And like I said, there's some upside there. And I do think it's going to take time for the Cavs and Celtics to figure out their new sort of arrangements, and that, like, the Cavs don't care about the regular season anyway. And like I said, I think the Celtics are a slightly worse regular season team. Like, could you see the Wizards, you know, snaking that number one spot? Because I there's a scenario for me where I think the Raptors can do it at, like, maybe 20%, 25%. But, like, where are you at with the Wizards on that? Like, do you think there's a chance that they could do that? Because I think it would behoove both of these teams to shoot for that in a way, because you kind of set yourself up to avoid at least one of the Cavs and Celtics in the playoffs, you know, assuming they end up with the 2 and 3 seeds like they did last year. So, yeah, like, the one seed is super interesting to me this season, and I think both the Wizards and Raptors have a shot at it.
No, I think that's an interesting point. I've been sort of, one of my lines on the podcast has been the Wizards need to have that sort of eye of the tiger right off the bat because, like you said, Cleveland or Boston, just being realistically, it's going to take a minute for them to figure out how to use all their new pieces. Boston is a real culture change across the board, like from defense to offense. And this is where an opportunity for Toronto and the Wizards, two teams, like you said, largely have stayed together. They don't have to relearn each other. I mean, the Wizards last year, on top of everything else, you know, had Scott Brooks coming in as the first year. Now this is, yeah, they're used to that. So they, you know, last year they started off 2-8 and still won 49 games. If they can avoid that kind of crappy start and jump on it right away, yeah, I do think there's something to that. You know, this is where the bench play comes into be a factor, because last year, more in the playoffs than the regular season, but, you know, they were using the starters so many minutes, especially the guards, that you could sort of see them get tired. I did feel John Wall's defense was not as good over the course of the full season, in the sense that there were games where you could kind of almost tell he was pacing himself because he's asked to do so much. But in being around, or if you look at John Wall's Instagram posts and social media, and I saw Markieff Morris during the summer, they both made references to getting up their endurance so they don't have an issue like they did in that Boston series happen again, that they'll be there. And I think that's a sign of also right from the top kind of maybe saying, hey, we got to get on top of this. We got to make sure we're ready to go. If they have that mentality, yeah, I think they do have a chance at the East, like you said, 15%, 20%, you know, something like that. But you got to start strong because you figure Boston and Cleveland will get it going, you know, sooner than later.
Yeah, probably. The East is bad. I'm sort of interested by it because top four teams, top five teams are, like, legitimately pretty good. But after that, like I think there's going to be a lot of opportunities for these teams to rack up wins is my point. And I wouldn't be shocked if, like, the top four teams in the East are all over 50 wins. Like, that, I don't think that's happened the last couple of years. I wouldn't be shocked if that happened this year, this time around.
You know, I'm just looking at it really quick. Regardless of the order, can we just lock into these the eight playoff teams? Boston, Cleveland, Toronto, Washington, Milwaukee, Miami, Miami, Charlotte, Philadelphia, sorry, Detroit, your ninth. Is that sound about right?
I'm not so sold on Philadelphia making it because, A,
I just want that to happen.
I would love to see it, but, A, young players are bad, and rookies are bad, and they have two rookies who are going to have the ball in their hands all the time, and those guys don't tend to really lead to winning as much as it might be entertaining. Like, I don't think Simmons and Fultz are going to be, like, winning players right away. And, like we talked about Bradley Beal not staying healthy for a season. Like, Joel Embiid has literally never done it. He's played 31 games in 3 years, and I'm betting on him not playing the whole season because, A, it would be dumb for the Sixers to, you know, overexert him in a season where, you know, it's going to be about development for them. And also, I just think, like, he doesn't seem like a guy who's built to stay healthy over the course of a full season. So I'm not betting on that happening. And, yeah, I think it's going to be a lot like the Wolves the last couple seasons where they've had a lot of talent and they've been super fun, but they've also been bad because young players are bad. And so, yeah, I'm not really penciling the Sixers in for that much of an improvement. I would say, yeah, can we just, like, cancel? Can we have a crossover from the West to the 8th seed? Because, like, I don't really see any team that's going to be totally deserving of that spot. I'd rather just see, like, whatever team finishes 9th in the West play there. Like, throw the Clippers in there. I do agree that Charlotte and Miami are probably in. Although Miami, I'm not super high on it because I think people are really glossing over the 11-30 start they had last year. That team was not good. And, like, they're expecting them to sort of replicate what they did at the end of the season last year, I think is unfair. I think they're probably right around the 500 team they ended up being, and maybe that gets you in. And so I guess that probably gets you in the East. But so I think Charlotte's there. Yeah, Milwaukee's a high variance team to me too. Like, they're one of those teams, like, maybe they have a 5% chance at the one seed if everything breaks right for them. I don't think they're going to fall out of the playoffs. So, yeah, I would say there's 7 locks. And Detroit, for me, I guess they're probably 8 for me, but, like, I'm not an Andre Drummond guy. I think he's pretty bad and, like, has a lot of different liabilities that he has and exposes your team in a lot of different ways. So, yeah, let's just cancel the 8th seed. Just give the first-round team in the number one team in the East a bye, I suppose, so that gives the Raptors and Wizards more incentive to shoot for it because the East is so bad.
Yeah, I mean, it really is not. It is not good. Even the Knicks almost, if they could straighten themselves out, might almost have a shot just because.
Yeah, actually, I'm rooting for the Knicks to do it. The Knicks will be, when the Knicks are good, it's fun, and I like Chris Tapps, and I like Frankie Smokes, and I hope they do it, because that would be the most interesting thing to me. They keep Melo all season, there's a redemption tour for Melo, with no Phil Jackson in town. Give me that.
Yeah, no, I absolutely. I'm with you. Well, cool, man, this was fun. I'm glad we got to talk about this. We, you know, stopped talking about those, even though we did a little bit, but, you know, we got to focus on those other teams that had home court advantage last year in the first round. It's not all about Cleveland and Boston. It's got, you know, these other teams. We gotta make sure people understand the Wizards and the Raptors have a shot. Any parting thought for you before we wrap up?
Not really. Just stop caring about rankings. They're bad, and they're meant to get you mad, and you're falling right into it if you're getting mad about them. Who cares? It doesn't matter. Stop caring.
I only hope that wherever John Wall gets ranked in these things is good enough for him, because he's a couple years ago, he definitely flipped out on Twitter about his ranking. It was good when I needed some blog posts, but yeah, we don't need that.
DeMar DeRozan has like a vendetta against the SI, so I know all about players feeling slighted. Yeah, I'm ready for it to be over.
Awesome. All right, man. Well, I definitely appreciate it. Again, if you want to follow Sean at Woodley Sean, or, of course, you know, check out the Locked on Raptors podcast as we get ready for the NBA season not far away. If you want to hit me up at Ben Standing and the Locked on Wizards, yada, yada, yada. Cool, Sean. Appreciate it, man. We will talk soon.
Yeah, for sure, man. Have a good preseason, I suppose, and we'll talk once the regular season gets going, I'm sure.
Awesome. Thanks, man.
Cheers.
Beal gets open for three. Dagger!
Bobby Sine,
punch! Old Prime, off-balance shot.
Dagger!
John Wall.